stray horn! Hold up! What do you want? I thought you had this all planned.
Things don't always go like they're planned.
They didn't even come close. We were supposed to get away from this little adventure with $25,000. How much did we get?
What are you trying to say, Hennessy?
I'm not trying to say it. I'm saying it. We left four men dead back there because of you. You let Boone hang because you wanted to be the leader? You couldn't lead a starving horse to oats.
You think you can do better?
Yeah, I think I can do better. Taylor and me robbed a stagecoach. We got money and nobody got killed.
You got what, $150?
That's $150 more than we got from the train.
Look, the greater the reward, the greater the risk. If you're afraid of risk, then I suggest you go into another line of work. Try being a store clerk.
I'm not afraid of a little risk if I think there's really a chance of some reward. With you, I doubt there is a chance.
If you don't want to ride with me, don't.
I don't intend to.
Hennessy, wait. I'm coming with you.
Anyone else want to come with us?
Although a few of the others looked nervous, none of them joined Hennessy.
All right. Have it your own way. But you might want to ask yourself who's going to be the next person to get ground up like Mills.
The arrival in Denver of the Midnight Flyer caused quite a stir. The city police came to interview Matt, the conductor, and many of the passengers. Upon learning that in addition to the two bodies on the train, there were at least four bodies back at the site where the robbery attempt was made, a telegram was sent to order the next train to stop and retrieve the bodies. After making all his official statements and talking to the press, Matt excused himself and got a room in a hotel, certain that he had heard the last of it. When Hennessy and Taylor rode into Denver a couple of days later, they saw a crowd gathered around the front of a hardware store. Approaching to see what was drawing the crowd, they saw the flash of a pan of phosphorus powder.
Oh, what was that?
Somebody taking a picture. Ain't you never seen nobody take a picture before?
Well, what are they taking a picture of?
How the hell do I know? I just got into town, same as you.
The two men headed over toward the hardware store. Dismounting, they tied off their horses, then moved in to see what was going on.
Damn, Hennessy. Look at that. That's old Loomis there.
Yeah, and Malone and Kale.
Loomis, Malone, and Kale, their skin now a pale blue-white, had been tied into their coffins and propped up against the front of the hardware store. On an easel alongside them was a sign.
Emil Carter, photographer. Take your picture with dead outlaws. 25 cents.
The photographer was doing a booming business by charging citizens 25 cents apiece to be photographed standing alongside the bodies. When he saw Hennessy and Taylor looking at the bodies, he smiled broadly and waved at the two men.
Would you like your pictures taken with the outlaws? Just cost you a quarter. And for an extra 10 cents, well, you can hold a gun while I take the picture.
Why would I want to do that?
Could be. Some years from now, folks will look at that picture and think you're the one that brought him to justice. Never mind that it was Matt Jensen.
Matt Jensen, huh?
Yes, sir. Quite the hero he was, too, what with killing the outlaws and saving the train and all. So, what'll it be, gents? Do you want your picture took with the outlaws?
No, I ain't interested in that. Where's the other one?
The other one?
There was four of them. Where's the other one?
Oh, it could be that you're talking about the engineer and the fireman. Their bodies have been took down to the railroad hall, where they'll stay till the funeral. Well, don't reckon these boys will be having much of what you would call a funeral.
I'm not talking about the fireman and the engineer. There was another man with these three.
No, I don't think so.
Sure there was another one, Emil. Don't you mind what the undertaker said? There was the one that got runned over by the train.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think the undertaker has him somewhere in the back. What's left of him, that is. Wasn't nothing he could do with that fella except put a few bloody pieces in a box. Surely you don't want to see him, do you?
No, I reckon not.
Oh, come on, Al. Let's go get us a drink.
Yeah.
5 minutes later, the two men were sitting at a table drinking a whiskey. Several others in the saloon were talking about the incident with the train and how heroically Matt Jensen had been in fighting off the would-be robbers and stopping the train.
That Jensen fella is one son of a bitch we need to avoid.
Or kill.
Matt was passing through the lobby of the hotel when someone called out to him.
Mr. Jensen!
Looking toward the person who called his name, Matt saw a very short, bald man holding a pencil and a narrow tablet.
You are Matt Jensen, are you not?
Yes.
Mr. Jensen, my name is Brandon, Alan Brandon. I'm a reporter for the Rocky Mountain News. I would like to do a story about you.
Would it be all right to talk here?
Well, yes, sir. This would be fine.
I don't understand why anyone would want to do a story about me.
No, you're much too modest, Mr. Jensen. You are a hero. The public has a right to know all about you.
No, I'm no hero, and the public has no right to know anything about me.
Please, Mr. Jensen, I'm just a man trying to make a living. Won't you let me interview you?
All right. Ask your questions. I'll answer as best as I can.
Oh, thank you for agreeing to talk to me, Mr. Jensen. What brings you to Denver?
As it turns out, I wasn't doing anything in particular, and you can do nothing in particular anywhere. So, I decided to do nothing in particular here in Denver.
I wonder what all the passengers on the Midnight Flyer would say if they knew that their hero was coming to Denver for no reason in particular.
I told you, I'm no hero.
Well, that's what you told me, all right, but that's not what the governor's niece says.
The governor's niece? What does the governor's niece have to do with anything?
Well, she says she met you on the train, and she credits you with saving her life.
The governor's niece? No, I don't recall meeting anyone like that.
You didn't meet the governor's niece on the train?
No.
I wonder why Miss McKenzie told me that she met you.
Wait a minute, did you just say McKenzie? Would that be Lane McKenzie?
Lane McKenzie's the governor's niece.
In that case, I guess I did meet her. Only, she never told me that she was the governor's niece.
Well, she is. And if she sings your praises to the governor the way she did to me, why, I wouldn't be surprised if the governor didn't invite you to the mansion for a dinner.
I don't think that's very likely.
You would go, wouldn't you?
I don't know. I suppose it would depend on what he's serving.
My, you are a simple man, aren't you?
2 days later, the story ran in the newspaper.
Heroic action saves train. Hero to be honored. On April 5th of this year, passengers on board the Midnight Flyer en route to this city had their journey interrupted by a band of brigands who lay in wait at the crest of Thunder Pass. The outlaws knew that at this point the train would be traveling at no faster than a slow walk, the decreased velocity necessitated by the long, steep climb. It was here that the would-be bank robbers managed to board the train, whereupon they immediately began to implement their nefarious plan. They forced the engine to stop. Then they sent 2 men onto the cars to relieve the hapless passengers of any coin of the realm they might be carrying on their person. While the robbers made careful plans as to where and how to board the train, they failed to take into account the presence on board of a man who proved not only to be their nemesis, but more than their equal. When one of the robbers entered the car in which Matt Jensen was traveling, the bold young man confronted the bandit, ultimately besting him in a shootout. Jensen then left the train to engage the others, and his spirited attack, though one man against many, interrupted the robbery, setting to flight the remaining outlaws. In the meantime, the road agents killed both the engineer and the fireman. Although exact details are unknown, it is believed that the fireman managed to put the engine in motion immediately prior to receiving his fatal wound. That resulted in a drastic increase in the train's velocity on a section of the track that railroad experts deem as quite hazardous due to many sharp turns that are necessitated by requirements of geography. The train, which should only have been traveling at no greater speed than 10 miles an hour, was going downhill with the throttle at full open. As a result, it accelerated to an excess of 60 miles per hour. Reboarding the train, Jensen realized rather immediately that something was terribly amiss, and he decided upon a course of action that would slow the speeding cars. That course of action, however, required that he reach the engine, and he was separated from the engine by 2 express cars that would not allow interior passage. He could accomplish that mission only by climbing over the top. It should be noted here that, in addition to the train's great speed, a raging ice storm added to the danger. Despite these perils, the intrepid Mr. Jensen, with total disregard of and great risk to his own life, braved both elements and the law of physics by climbing to the top of the speeding, oscillating, and ice-covered cars. The realization that the 131 hapless passengers were being hurtled to a sure death and the concern for their safety being paramount in his mind, Matt Jensen undertook the task before him. Our intrepid hero succeeded in reaching the engine cab, where he found fireman Hank Mabry dead as a result of a gunshot wound. Acting quickly, passenger Jensen, who knew naught of the operation of a modern locomotive, save that which had been provided to him by Conductor Cooper prior to his undertaking the adventure, managed to bring the speeding train to a halt just before it reached Miller's Curve, where, no doubt, it would have plunged over the trestle, resulting in the untimely death of all on board. At a special ceremony to be held on the 21st instant in the ballroom of the Palace Hotel, Governor John Long Rout will present Mr. Jensen with a proclamation expressing the thanks of the state of Colorado. In addition, a representative of the Denver and Rio Grande will give an award of $500 and a 1 year's free pass upon any Denver and Rio Grande train.
Jesus H. Christ, a ceremony. Come on.
Matt looked up, saw a tall, thin, bald-headed man sporting a goatee standing at his table. A pair of pince-nez glasses perched on the end of his nose, and he was carrying a bowler hat.
Mr. Jensen, are you Mr. Matt Jensen?
Yes, I'm Matt Jensen.
My name is George Highgate, Mr. Jensen. I'm a private secretary to His Honor John Longrout, governor of the state of Colorado.
Highgate handed Matt a small white envelope.
The governor asked me to give this to you.
What is it?
It's not my place to say, sir.
Fair enough.
Matt opened the envelope, then removed the card. The card was beautifully written.
John Longrout, governor of the state of Colorado, requests the presence of Matthew Jensen at a reception in his honor to be held in the ballroom of the Palace Hotel on the 29th of April.
And do you have a response for the governor, Mr. Jensen?
Yeah, I have a response.
And your response would be?
My response is, I'm not going.
But surely you're not serious, sir. One simply does not refuse an invitation from the governor.
This one is. Just tell the Denver and Rio Grande to send me a draft for the money.
Well, I'm sorry, sir. I can't do that. The governor anticipated something like this. So, he has made getting the money from the railroad company contingent upon you being present at the ceremony.
For a brief instant, Matt was angry with the governor for doing that. Then, realizing that the governor's method was one sure way of making certain that he attend, Matt smiled.
I'll give the governor this. He's a smart old coot. Because there's absolutely no way I would attend such a thing without this incentive.
Your word for the governor, sir?
Tell the governor I will be honored to attend.
I'm sure that the governor and his niece, Miss Lane McKenzie, would be quite pleased you have accepted the invitation.
At that very moment, Lane McKenzie was in the same cafe as Matt Jensen, though she was standing behind a post and a potted plant keeping herself out of sight. She watched as Highgate approached Matt and presented him with the invitation from her uncle. With Lane was a new friend she had met since arriving in Denver.
There he is, Millie. Do you see him? The man Mr. Highgate is talking to?
Yes.
So that is the dashing and heroic Matt Jensen, is it? Oh, my. I can see why you're so taken with him. He is a very handsome man.
Yes, he is. Oh, Millie, please don't stare. I would simply die if he caught us staring at him.
I thought you and he were old friends.
We met on the train. That doesn't make us old friends.
Why don't you introduce me?
Oh, no, I couldn't do that.
I see. You want to keep him for yourself, do you?
Well, I can't say as I blame you.
No, it isn't that. It's just that, well, I rather foolishly threw myself at him on the train.
I invited him to call on me when we reached Denver, and he hasn't done so.
He may yet.
I doubt it. It's been nearly 2 weeks now, and he's made no effort to contact me.
Maybe he doesn't know where to find you.
Oh, he knows. When Mr. Highgate delivered my uncle's invitation to him, I made certain that Mr. Highgate would remind him that I was the governor's niece.
Well, there you go. It could be that he is intimidated by you.
What do you mean, intimidated?
You are the governor's niece, after all. I can see how that might give most men pause before they called on you.
Millie, You are talking about a man who faced a gang of outlaws all alone, then climbed on top of a train doing 60 miles an hour in an ice storm. I cannot see such a man being intimidated by the mere fact that I'm the governor's niece.
No, I suppose not. I was just trying to give you an excuse for why he hasn't contacted you, other than the fact that he might find you ugly.
What?
I know what you can do.
What?
You can invite him to the firemen's charity ball tomorrow.
Oh, no, I don't think I could do that. Ask him to escort me to a dance? That would be very unseemly.
You aren't asking him to escort you. You are merely asking him to come to the ball. After all, it is a charitable function. The Volunteer Fire Company will be taking up a collection there to be used for the Widows and Orphans Fund.
Yes. Yes, I suppose I could do something like that. That wouldn't be forward, would it?
Not at all. Would you like me to come with you? We can ask him now.
Oh, yes. Would you?
Of course I will. I fear you will never introduce me if I don't.
All right. Come with me.
Lane and Millie walked over to Matt's table. Seeing them approach, Matt stood.
Good afternoon, ladies.
Good afternoon. I wonder if you would...
Lane looked at her friend for a second, then smiled as she realized that Millie was hinting at an introduction.
Oh, Mr. Jensen, this is my friend, Millie St. Cyr.
I'm so pleased to meet you, Mr. Jensen.
It's nice to meet you, Miss St. Cyr. Would you ladies like to join me for lunch?
Oh, no, thank you, but we've already eaten.
Perhaps another time.
Another time, yes.
Lane, aren't you going to invite the gentleman?
Yes, Mr. Jensen, there's to be a dance tomorrow. The Fireman's Charity Ball being held at the Courthouse Hall. It's a benefit for widows and orphans, and the fire company has asked that we invite as many as we can to attend. Do you think you might... find the time to attend?
Both Lane and I will be there, and we promise to leave a spot open on our dance cards for you.
Well, then, how can I refuse an invitation like that? Of course I'll come.
Oh, good. Then we shall look forward to seeing you there,
Mr. Jensen.
Ladies?
With that, the two young women turned and walked away.
That wasn't so hard now, was it?
Oh, no, it wasn't hard at all. And, oh, Millie, I have had the grandest time out here. I'm so glad Uncle John invited me. Why, I would have never met a friend like you if I hadn't come out here. And you must come back to Cairo to visit me sometime.
I will. I just wish you didn't have to return.
I do, too. But I can't stay with my uncle forever. He has his own family, and I need to get back to mine. Plus... I will need to make preparations for my teaching job this fall.
When are you going back?
Not until late summer. I have several weeks remaining.
Good. That will give us a lot more time together.
Oh, and I've asked Uncle John. You can sit at the table with me at the reception and ceremony honoring Mr. Jensen.
That will be fun. I wonder if Matt Jensen is married.
Oh, heavens, I don't know. Surely he's not married. Or he would have told us so when we invited him to the dance, don't you think?
Why? We didn't ask him to escort either one of us. We just invited him to a charitable event.
One in which you volunteered that we would save a place on our dance cards for him. You said that as if our dance cards were nearly filled.
As far as Mr. Jensen is concerned, our dance cards are nearly filled. It will increase his interest if he believes we are so popular that we can barely find time for him.
If you say so.
So... are we going to go shopping, or are we just going to stand here and prattle on all morning?
We're going shopping.
Across the street, the two women saw men standing on ladders on opposite sides of the street erecting a sign. The sign, a huge banner that stretched all the way across the street, was attached on the north side of the street to the front of the hotel and on the south side of the street to Drew's Hardware Store.
Colorado honors Matt Jensen. Oh, my. Look at that. They have Mr. Jensen's name spread all the way across the street.
Oh, I bet he will be very proud to see that.
I'm not so sure.
What do you mean you aren't sure? Who wouldn't appreciate such an honor?
Just from what I've observed by being around him, I get the feeling that Mr. Jensen is a very reserved man, not given to self-aggrandizement. I think, all things considered, he'd rather not have the sign so prominently displayed.
I hadn't thought about that.
You may be right.
Come, let's go shopping. I wouldn't want him to come out of the restaurant now and see us standing here looking up at the sign.
All right. There are some new hats at Graber's Emporium. Let's go see them before they are all sold.
Later that afternoon, Lane stepped off the omnibus when it stopped in front of the governor's mansion, and, gathering her two purchases, one a straw hat, the other some ribbon, started up the walk to the house.
Ah, good afternoon, Miss McKenzie.
Highgate led her into the house.
I trust you had a pleasant day.
Oh, yes, very pleasant. Is my uncle home?
Yes, miss. You'll find him sitting on the back porch.
Lane put her packages on a table, then walked through the house and stepped out onto the back porch. The governor was reading a newspaper.
Hello, Uncle.
Governor Rout looked up and smiled at his beautiful young niece.
Ah, Lane, my dear. How nice to see you.
Are you reading about Matt Jensen?
Yes, it is quite a story. It makes me realize all the more the danger you were in. Had anything happened to you, my dear, I would never be able to face my sister again.
Of course you would, Uncle. You had nothing to do with putting me in danger. I'm the one who wanted to come.
I hope that ordeal hasn't soured you on Colorado.
On the contrary, I have found the entire adventure to be quite exciting. To say nothing of having met Matt Jensen again, Millie and I invited him to the Fireman's Charity Ball tomorrow. I hope that wasn't too forward of us.
Too forward? Of course not. Well, I'm sure you'll have a fine time at the dance tomorrow night. And I must confess, I'm looking forward to presenting him with a proclamation at the reception.
Yes, I am looking forward to being there as well.
I'm glad that you will be there. I'm sure your presence will brighten the occasion for everyone.
Highgate appeared on the porch.
Yes, George, what is it?
I wonder if I might have a word with you, sir.
Yes, of course. Pour yourself a cup of coffee and join us.
Highgate looked pointedly at Lane, but he said nothing. However, Lane took the hint, and standing quickly, she excused herself.
Uncle, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to my room to look at some of the purchases I made today.
Of course I'll excuse you. I'm glad you had a good day.
After Lane was gone, the governor looked up at Highgate.
Yes, George, what is it?
I was wondering, sir, if I might not have an advance on my salary.
How much is it this time?
$150.
$150? George, that's 3 months.
I know. I apologize, Governor, I do. But it's for my sister. Got a letter from her today saying that she and her husband may lose their farm if they can't pay off the mortgage.
Governor Rout stroked his mustache for a moment before he answered.
All right. I'll tell you what. I don't know that I can authorize an advance in your salary without going through a lot of explanation. After all, the state pays you, not I. But I will personally lend you the money, and you can pay me back whenever you can.
Oh, thank you, Governor. From the bottom of my heart, I thank you.
That's all right. Things like this can happen to anyone. I'm just glad that I can help.
Well, I will write my sister today and tell her not to worry.
Highgate turned and walked away from the governor, barely able to hide his wry grin. For though he hated using the man, the maiden call of the roulette wheel was a burdensome mistress. With this money, he could pay back what he owed and finally get back on the winning track. One bet. That was all he would need. And if things didn't go his way, well, never mind that. This was a sure bet. He couldn't lose. Although the Fireman's Charity Ball wasn't due to start until 7 o'clock of the evening, the courthouse hall was busy for most of the afternoon. Millie belonged to a young woman's group called Denver Maidens of Mercy, an organization dedicated to helping others. The Maidens of Mercy were in the courthouse hall helping with the decorations and helping to set up for the evening's entertainment. At the rear of the hall, a hydrant was placed upon a pedestal. Attached to the hydrant and running down each wall were fire hoses. At the moment, Millie was standing on a ladder weaving a long strand of greenery and garland around one of the hoses. Others from the club were polishing the brass nozzles so that they flashed and glistened in the light.
All right, I'm ready for another strand.
Coming right up.
Lane turned toward the table where the strands had been laid out, and Norma Jean Proud, a short, dark-haired girl and friend of Millie's, handed it to her.
What is he like?
What is who like?
Oh, you know, Matt Jensen. Is he handsome?
I suppose you could.
Yes, he is very handsome.
Don't listen to Lane. She's just trying to keep him for herself.
I am not. Oh, pay no attention to Millie. She's just trying to embarrass you so she can have him all to herself.
This is all so funny. Don't you think Mr. Jensen ought to have some say-so in all of this?
Oh, don't be silly. Men just think they have a say-so. Everyone knows they do only what their women allow them to.
For the next hour, the girls and the firemen continued to prepare the courthouse hall.
Oh my, look at the time. We barely have time to go home and get ready for the dance.
In a nearby saloon, a man sat alone in a table at the back of the room. From time to time, one of the bar girls would drop by his table and, with a practiced grin, would inquire as to his needs.
The only thing I need is for you to leave me the hell alone.
As the girls shared his reaction to them with the others, they stopped trying to be nice to him. The man was drinking whiskey and reading the paper. He had already read the article about Matt Jensen being feted by the governor of Colorado. That was what brought him to Denver. Now he was reading an article about the fireman's charity ball and noticed that Matt Jensen would be in attendance. It was the last line that caught his attention.
As the purpose of the fireman's charity ball is to raise funds to be dispersed to widows and the orphans of the city, anyone who is disposed toward financial participation in the Elminsary endeavor is welcome to attend.
When Matt Jensen arrived at the courthouse hall, there was a table set up just inside the door. The table was manned by firemen in uniform. There was a big bowl on the table and a hand-lettered sign in front of the bowl.
Friend, our plea is not for much. Give only what you are able. Your donation will help widows and orphans and such. Put food upon their table.
Matt dropped $5 into the bowl. Then he stepped out onto the floor. The hall was very crowded as the men in clean jeans and pressed shirts intermingled with the women in their butterfly bright gingham dresses.
Oh, Mr. Jensen, there you are. I'm so glad you could come.
Lane came toward him with a big smile.
Well, I thank you for inviting me. I hope your dance card isn't taken for this dance.
I've left this one open.
The dance ended, and the square broke up.
Well, I thank you kindly for the dance.
You're very welcome, Mr. Jensen. I hope to see you a bit later.
But that was when the busboy approached Matt.
Excuse me, sir, but a gentleman asked me to give you this envelope.
What gentleman?
One standing over. He's a short fella, dark hair, kind of swarthy skin. Well, that's funny. He ain't there no more.
Let me see the envelope.
Looking inside the envelope, Matt saw a .50 caliber bullet. A little piece of paper was wrapped around the bullet, secured by a strip of rawhide. On the paper was his name and the same symbol he had seen before.
Look around, man. Do you see him anywhere?
No, sir. He ain't nowhere in the building. Well, that seems strange, him giving me something to give you and then not even staying around since you could see who done it.
Under the circumstances, maybe not so strange.
Beg your pardon, sir?
Nothing. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Matt, what is it? What's in the envelope?
Nothing in particular.
I don't believe that. I told you once before when we were on the train, remember? I told you then that you have a remarkably expressive face. I don't know what was in the envelope, but it did disturb you.
I think curious would be a better word than disturb. I'm curious as to why anyone would send me something like this.
Matt opened the envelope to allow Lane to look inside.
What is it? My word! What a strange thing to send to someone.
It's probably just someone's idea of a joke.
When Matt went into his hotel room that night, he turned up the gas lights, then walked over to sit on the bed to remove his boots.
Shit!
Matt snaked his revolver from the holster that hung on the headboard, then crawled over toward the window. Raising himself just high enough to peek through the window, he saw a muzzle flash in the hayloft of a barn across the street. The barn housed the mules for a wagon freight company. Matt raised his pistol. Because he had no specific target, he didn't expect to hit anything. He crawled across the floor to the door, opened it, then went out into the hall and ran toward the window at the end of the hall. Stepping up onto the windowsill, Matt jumped down into the area between the hotel and the neighboring building. Then, with pistol in hand, he darted across the street and began working his way toward the barn. Reaching the side of the barn, he backed against it, then started working his way toward the main door.
Son of a bitch!
At the sound of the running horse, Matt knew he had lost his prey once again. As Smoke Jensen rode down Wynkoop Street the next day, he had to maneuver his horse from side to side in order to negotiate his way through the heavy traffic of coaches, carriages, and wagons. There was a large banner stretched across the street, and looking up, Smoke smiled when he saw the name.
Colorado honors Matt Jensen.
This was a proud moment for Smoke, having Matt honored by the state of Colorado. Smoke and Matt had shared their time together long before Smoke married Sally and long before his two most loyal hands, Pearly and Cal, had come to work at Sugarloaf. But Sally understood the bond between Smoke and Matt, and it was she who, having read the article in the Rocky Mountain News, suggested to Smoke that he go to Denver for the ceremony. After getting a room in the hotel, Smoke took a bath and put on a suit. Then he went downstairs and walked through the lobby to a large ballroom that was being used as a reception hall. Through the open door of the room, he could see several well-dressed men and women standing around laughing and talking. A large man was standing near the open door and looking out into the lobby. By the man's demeanor and by the expression on his face, Smoke could see that he was not a guest of the reception, but was a guard. The guard came toward Smoke, shaking his head and with his hand extended.
All right. I don't want to cause any trouble. I'll wait out here. I would appreciate it, though, if you would tell Matt Jensen that Smoke is here.
Matt went downstairs, through the lobby, and into the large ballroom. Here, several dozen tables were scattered about, already filled with elegantly dressed representatives of Denver citizenry. Despite its brief history, Denver, with a population of well over 100,000 people, was already the largest city between St. Louis and San Francisco. It was also one of the wealthiest cities, so that the net worth of those gathered here tonight could compete with any similar gathering in any city in America. He was met just inside the door by George Highgate, who escorted him to the long table on the dais.
Where's the governor?
He will be here in a moment, sir.
Good evening, Mr. Jensen.
Good evening, Miss McKenzie.
Speaking on behalf of the widows and orphans of the city, may I tell you how much we appreciated your presence at the Fireman's Charity Ball last night.
Believe me, the appreciation and the pleasure were all mine.
You remember all my friends, I believe.
Let me see if I can remember.
Matt looked at each of the girls he had met last night and called them each by name in turn.
This is Miss Millie St. Cyr, Miss Norma Jean Proud, Miss Sue Kendall, and Miss Annie Jones.
Oh, my. I am very impressed.
Yes, especially as you're so famous now.
Hardly famous, Miss Proud, and definitely not a hero.
I think Mrs. Jensen would argue that fact. Surely your wife believes you to be a hero.
No, there is no Mrs. Jensen. That is, I have no wife.
Millie, what a shameless way to ask if the gentleman is married.
At that moment, the governor was just passing through the lobby when he saw Smoke Jensen. Breaking into a wide smile, the governor hurried over to extend a personal greeting.
Smoke Jensen, how good to see you.
Hello, John.
Come with me, Smoke. I'm sure Matt is looking for you.
I doubt it. I didn't tell him I was coming. I wanted to surprise him.
Oh, well, that's even better. Come along.
Smoke followed the governor through a cloud of aromatic tobacco and pipe smoke. He saw Matt before Matt saw him. It was easy to pick Matt out from the crowd. His young protege stood over 6 feet tall with broad shoulders and narrow hips. His blonde hair seemed even more yellow than Smoke remembered. Matt didn't see Smoke right away because he had his back turned and he was surrounded by about half a dozen very beautiful women, each woman vying for his attention.
And then the doctor said, "That's not his leg, ma'am."
And you always were able to spin a good yarn.
A huge smile spread across Matt's face, and he turned to greet the man who had just spoken.
Smoke! What are you doing here?
You're getting an award from the governor, aren't you? I had to be here.
Ladies, I would like to introduce Smoke Jensen.
Did you say Jensen?
I sure did.
Is he your brother?
Yes, indeed. Smoke is my brother.
There was a dinner after the reception, and though Smoke offered to leave, he was persuaded to stay when he learned that the governor had made special arrangements for him at the head table. When all were seated, Governor Rout tapped his spoon on the crystal goblet.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is my distinct honor and privilege tonight to host this banquet in honor of Matthew Jensen, one of Colorado's leading citizens. And now, as governor of the state of Colorado, I hereby issue this proclamation declaring this day to be officially entered into the state historical records as Matthew Jensen Day.
Slowly and uncomfortably, Matt Jensen made his way towards the podium, where he knew he was expected to make some kind of speech.
I'm not a hero. A hero is someone who takes a great risk to do something very dangerous for the good of others. I had no choice. If I had not tried to stop the engine, the train would have gone off the track and I'd have been killed along with the others. When you do such a thing as a matter of necessity rather than as a matter of choice, it's not heroic. It's basic animal survival. Nevertheless, I am grateful to Governor Rout for this honor and grateful to the Denver and Rio Grande Railroad for their generosity. Thank you very much.
After the reception and dinner, Matt was pleased to see that the people seemed as genuinely pleased to meet Smoke and shake his hand as they were to meet Matt and shake his. This was as it should be, Matt knew, because long before anyone had ever heard of Matt, Smoke Jensen was performing heroic deeds. As Matt watched the others react to Smoke Jensen, he recalled his connection with the famous mountain man. At breakfast the next morning, Smoke commented on his surprise over the number of people who had made a special effort to greet him.
You shouldn't be surprised. Surely you know that you are one of the best-known men in the entire state of Colorado. Why, if you ran for governor today, I've no doubt that you'd be elected.
Don't tell John that, though he has no need to worry. I have no intention of ever entering politics. But maybe you should. You're getting quite an enviable reputation yourself. You're still young enough. Why, you could have a very successful political career.
Thanks, but no thanks. How's Sally?
Sally sends her love.
You tell her that I send mine as well.
I'll do that.
Smoke, I need your advice on something.
Well, now that warms my soul. It's good to know that the student still thinks he can learn something from his teacher.
Are you kidding? There'll be never a time when I can't learn from you.
What is it?
Matt reached into his shirt pocket and pulled out 3 50 caliber shells, 3 strips of rawhide, and 3 pieces of paper, each of them bearing his name and the bullseye symbol.
Where did you get these?
They were given to me.
Smoke looked up in surprise.
In a manner of speaking.
Matt explained how there had been 3 attempts on his life, and how, after each attempt, he had found one of these little symbols wrapped around a bullet and held in place with a strip of rawhide.
Have you made any Indian enemies?
None that I know of.
Then you've made one that you don't know of. This symbol isn't just a bullseye. It's called a Masao. It's the Hopi Indians' god of death. Whoever is leaving this for you is Hopi. Or at least part Hopi.
Hopi? But the Hopi have always been peaceful. Even their name means peace.
That's true. But you can have a bad apple in any barrel. Just because the Hopi as a people are peaceful doesn't mean you can't have one of them who's a mean son of a bitch. Do you know anyone who is Hopi?
No.
Well, some Hopi knows you. He doesn't like you very much. So keep your eyes open.
I will.
I need to get started back.
Matt nodded and walked to the door with his friend. It was always like this when the two encountered each other. Matt had never made an effort to dissuade him from leaving, nor had he ever put forth any notion to join him. Each man was supremely confident in his own life and in the absolute certainty that their friendship would remain strong despite lengthy and distant separations. Matt went down to the train station a bit later on that same day. He was already getting restless and knew that Denver was not the place for him.
Well, Where would you like to go, sir?
You suggest a place.
I'll beg your pardon, sir?
Nah, I don't have any particular place to go. What would you suggest?
Oh, well, Colorado Springs is certainly nice this time of year.
Then Colorado Springs it'll be. For me and my horse.
On the very night Matt was leaving for Colorado Springs, at the Buttram Ranch near Greenbourne Creek, Marcus Strayhorn and his cronies sat 300 yards from the house.
Put that cigar out!
Sorry, Marcus, I guess I wasn't thinking.
Strayhorn, Teach, and Decker were all wearing hats pulled low over their faces and long dusters that were hanging open to provide access to the pistols that stuck from their belts.
You sure there's money here?
You heard what them fellas said, same as I did. Buttram got himself almost $1,500 for the cows he sold last fall, and he keeps every cent of it in the house.
That's what they said, all right.
Besides, we ain't only going to get the money. We'll get some victuals as well. Decker, you hit the smokehouse. Take every bit of meat they got a curing.
Hope they got a couple of slabs of bacon.
Teach, you go in with me.
Inside the house, Silas had just gone to bed when he heard men talking.
You stay here, Carla.
Silas relit the lantern, then got out of bed and started to pull on his trousers. Holding up his trousers, Silas started toward the living room and the shotgun he kept over the fireplace.
You looking for this? Who the hell are you?
Silas! No!
What about the woman?
If she tells us where the money is, we'll let her live. If she don't, we'll kill her.
It's in the bedroom, under the mattress.
Well, now that's more like it.
Rushing into the bedroom, Strayhorn flipped the mattress over and, seeing a small cloth bag tied to the spring under the mattress, he opened it.
There it is.
As he counted the money, the expression on his face changed from one of excitement to one of anger and frustration.
Where's the rest of it?
Rest of it? What rest of it? That's all we have. But take it.
Moving quickly to Carla, Strayhorn reached down and pulled her to her feet.
Where is the rest of it?
Please, there is no rest of it. This is everything we have.
You're lying. There's not more than $100 here. I know damn well you got almost $1,500 from them cows you sold last fall.
We paid off the mortgage on our place. There's no more money.
Ah!
Seeing the lantern Silas had lit, he picked it up and threw it against the wall.
Ugh!
The lantern broke, and flames began leaping up onto the kerosene-soaked wallpaper.
Let's get out of here.
What about her?
Drag her out to the barn. No more money than we got, we may as well have a little fun with her.
Teach looked at Carla and smiled. His face, bathed in orange now from the glow of the fire, gave him the appearance of a demon from hell.
Yeah, that's what I figured as well.
No!
Woman, whether you're dead or alive, we're gonna have our way with you.
I won't fight you anymore, but please, please don't leave him in here to burn up.
You don't understand, do you? You ain't in no position to bargain.
Damn! We're all gonna cook if we don't get out of here!
Grab her and let's go!
As Teach reached for the woman's shoulder, she suddenly and unexpectedly pulled his gun from his holster.
What the hell?
Carla pointed the gun at Teach, then at Strayhorn. Then, to the shock of both men, she put the gun to her temple and pulled the trigger.
Damn! There goes the cock, Cozy!
Let's go! We don't get out of here now, we'll choke!
Decker was already standing out front, holding a slab of bacon and a sack of coffee beans.
What happened? How'd the house catch on fire?
Lantern fell over.
Did you get the money?
Let's go.
When he first saw him, he gasped, for he thought that the man had no nose, and he wondered if it had been cut off. When the man came to sit at the table with him, though, he saw that he did have a nose. It was just mashed so flat that it was almost even with his face.
My name is Nelson. I got a message to meet someone here at this table at 11 o'clock. Would that be you?
Yes.
Well, some folks call me No-Nose, but I don't know why. Do you get it?
Yes, I get it.
I got in a fight with my brother when I was a kid, and he smashed me in the face with an axe handle. Broke my nose so that it's like this. Can't do nothing about it, so I'll joke about it.
Indeed.
I didn't get your name.
My name isn't important.
Well, it's very important to me, mister, if we're going to do business together.
Very well. My name is Smith.
Is that your name?
I have a proposition for you.
A what? A a what?
A suggestion. A suggestion as to how you might be able to make a lot of money.
A suggestion?
Yes, if you are interested.
I might be. You say it can make me a lot of money? How much money are we talking about?
Oh, I assure you, we are talking about a great deal of money for both of us.
So you say?
Yes, so I say. And I am in a position to know what I am talking about. Are you interested? Because if you aren't interested, I can always get someone else.
No, I'm interested. What is this great idea?
Well, before we proceed, I must tell you that what I am proposing, though it will be extremely profitable, is against the law. You go to prison if caught.
Mr. Smith, I don't reckon you would even got in touch with me if this was legal. I ain't afraid of doing something illegal. Most ways of making a lot of money is against the law anyway.
It will also require a few people who are equally willing to violate the law. Do you have access to such men?
Do I have access? Yeah, I have access.
And how many men do you have?
How many do I need?
At least 4, I would think. Maybe more.
Oh, I can't get them.
You can get them, or you have them.
Look, what is it with all the questions here? Do you have any idea how to make a lot of money or not? Because if you don't, then there ain't no need in us talking anymore.
Yes, I have an idea. I was just making certain you understood that we would need more men in order to do the job effectively.
Oh, I got him. Now, what's this job you have in mind?
Hennessy and Taylor had ridden south from Denver for 4 days and were having breakfast at a cafe in the small town of Clermont. Hennessy was reading a newspaper that had been left on the table. Taylor was buttering a biscuit.
Well, what do you know?
What do I know about what?
Listen to this. Colorado Springs is pleased to have as a visitor Matt Jensen. Mr. Jensen, recently honored by Governor John Long Rowett, is a true hero of Colorado, having risked his life to save a train from sure disaster. A modest man, Mr. Jensen declines to think of himself as a hero.
Yeah, we know all that. We was in Denver, remember?
You're missing the point.
Well, what is the point?
The point is, Jensen was in Denver. Now he's in Colorado Springs. That's only 15 miles from here. I think we should pay him a visit.
What are you talking about? Why would we want to visit him?
Why? Because we're going to kill the son of a bitch, that's why.
Matt was a guest in the Del Rey Hotel, staying there not to take the waters, as did so many who came there, but merely to enjoy a few days in a nice hotel that was known for good service. After getting settled in, Matt decided to go to the saloon to get some lunch. Matt walked up to the bar.
I'll take a beer.
Just before he took out his money, a nickel dropped on the bar.
Uh-uh, your money's no good here. I'm buying.
When Matt turned, he saw a middle-aged man wearing a sheriff's badge. The sheriff stuck out his hand.
You'd be Matt Jensen, wouldn't you?
Yes.
I don't reckon you remember me, Matt, but I met you 7 years ago when I was sheriffing down in Meeker. You was just a pup then.
Sure I remember. That was when Smoke shot Bodine and Colby, your Sheriff Adams.
Well, you got a good memory, friend. But then for a boy your age to see something like that, I reckon it would stick in your memory. And from what I hear, you are every bit as good as Smoke.
I wouldn't say that, but I am grateful to Smoke for teaching me what skills I do have.
You say Smoke Jensen taught you everything, but I doubt that even Smoke taught you how to crawl across the top of ice-covered train cars doing 60 miles an hour in order to stop a runaway train.
Hey, you've heard of my little bout of foolishness, have you?
Who hasn't heard? You're a hero all over the state. What brings you to Colorado Springs? You're a long way from home, aren't you?
Nothing in particular brings me here, Sheriff. And since I move around a lot, I'm never any further from home than the nearest hotel.
Ah, the joys of youth. There was a time when I thought it'd be nice to be like a tumbleweed, just wandering around from place to place.
What kept you from doing it?
Well, the war stopped me. Oh, don't get me wrong, I traveled during the war. Shiloh, Antietam, Chancellorsville, Franklin. But it wasn't quite the kind of traveling I had in mind. Then, after the war, I came out here from Ohio. But that's about as far as my wandering got me, because the next thing you know, I had me a wife and a house full of kids. That's when I started into this line of work. I was a city sheriff, then a deputy, then a sheriff back in Meeker. Then Millie, that's my wife, took the lumbago and we figured to come here for the waters. Oh, it's done wonders for her.
Oh, say, Mr. Jensen, I almost forgot. But the mail clerk dropped a letter off for you today. It came general delivery, but he figured the best way to get it to you would be to leave it here. Just a minute, I'll get it for you.
A moment later, the bartender handed the letter to Matt.
Thanks. Think you could bring me something to eat?
Ham, beans, cornbread?
Sounds good.
Matt took the letter to the table. Matt didn't even look at the letter until he sat down. Then he smiled when he saw the return address.
Lane McKenzie, care of Governor John Long Rout, Governor's Mansion, Denver, Colorado.
Dear Mr. Jensen, if you are surprised to be receiving this letter, believe me, you are no more surprised than I am with myself for writing it. I know that it is very forward of me and probably very foolish as well, but God help me, because I can't help myself. I hope you don't mind, Mr. Jensen, but I've researched your background. I know that Smoke Jensen is not your actual brother, but rather someone who took you in when you were still quite young. I know, too, that you assumed his name out of a sense of gratitude. To do such a thing speaks very highly of you. It shows a strong sense of obligation and loyalty. Excellent traits in anyone. That does not surprise me. So readily did you risk your life to save others. You have attempted to pass your exploits off as non-heroic by claiming that you were just saving your own life. But that is merely because of your self-deprecating nature. I enjoyed our brief meetings on the train, at the Fireman's Charity Ball, and again at the reception where you were honored by the state. I confess to hoping our meetings would have been more frequent, but you're a man who is careful of the feelings of others, and you understood what I did not. You knew that your nomadic life would not lend itself to encumbering relationships, and that to do any less would be to trifle with my feelings. I understand that, Matthew Jensen. I know that there can never be anything in the nature of a romantic connection between us. Indeed, the conditions of my employment with the school board of Cairo, Illinois, would preclude that. However, I do believe that even if we were never to see each other again, I can set apart this brief moment when our lives converged and hold that dear to my memory in all the years to come. I do hope that sharing this bit of information with you does not burden you with the unwanted attention of an admiring female. May your life be filled with blessings is the prayer I shall say for you for the rest of my days. Sincerely, Lane McKenzie.
Are you Mr. Jensen?
Looking up, Matt saw an old man, unkempt and poorly dressed.
Trumbo, what are you doing in here? I told you not to come in here anymore begging for drinks.
I ain't in here cashing drinks. I got money from my old drink. All I'm doing is talking to Mr. Jensen.
You ain't got no business talking to him.
Oh, yes I do. Where do you think I got this here money? I was paid to give him a message.
What message is that?
There's a fella out in the street told me to tell you to come out to meet him.
He's out there now?
Yes, sir. He's standing right out there in the middle of the street. Said he'll be waiting for you.
What does he want with Mr. Jensen?
Well, sir, he didn't tell me that. But if you was to ask me, I don't think he's planning on greeting him like an old friend.
Sheriff Adams walked over to look out through the window. Although moments before the street had been busy, now it was deserted, except for one man who was standing in the middle of the street about 100 feet away. It was easy to see why the street had become deserted, because the man was holding a gun in his hand, pointing it toward the saloon door. He was obviously prepared to fight.
Trumbo's right. Whoever that fella is, he's standing out there holding a gun.
Jensen!
Matt Jensen! I'm calling you out!
Matt walked over to look out as well.
I'll be damned. It's Al Hennessy.
Al Hennessy? Are you sure?
Yes.
You stay here, Matt. Hennessy's a wanted man. This'll be my business, I reckon.
No, it's my business. It's me he wants. I'm the one that brought him in to hang.
As Matt continued to look outside, he saw that though the street had emptied, men and women could still be seen scurrying down the sidewalks, stepping into buildings or behind them to get out of the line of fire while taking up positions in the doors and windows so they wouldn't miss anything. Even the horses had been moved off the street as nervous owners feared they might get hit by a stray bullet.
You don't have to do this yourself, you know. I could go out through the back door, then sneak around and come up on them from the other side of the street. I think if you saw the two of us, you might give up.
No, I thank you, Sheriff, but this is my fight. I'm going to have to fight it my way.
Well, the thing is, Matt, your way might get someone killed.
That's true. I just intend to make certain it isn't you, me, or some innocent person from town.
Jensen! You coming out?